Okay, my name's Emily, and I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic, and I'll be sharing with you tonight. Thank you very much for asking me to do this share. For anyone who's listening on the podcast, I mean, personally, I found podcasts really, really useful to me before I came into OA, and I couldn't get to meetings. The podcasts were really useful to listen to other people's stories. And I think it was one of those things that allowed me to kind of take myself seriously when I heard other people's stories. And I think, oh gosh, I can relate to that. And yeah, that's me. And I've done that. Or I know exactly what that person was thinking when they were sharing that. So it's really useful. But if you don't hear in this podcast what relates to your story, there'll be plenty of other people who have stories that you will relate to. So I'll just start off, so I'll do kind of what it was like before I came to OA, and that was quite a long time, and then what happened to me in OA and since. And my eating disorder probably started when I was about 17, and it was a real shock, because growing up during the 80s, there was quite a lot of strong women around. Madonna and Cyndi Lauper and lots of kind of women who I really enjoyed their music, and they were really strong, powerful women, and you know, there was a kind of lot of feminism around at that time that was quite liberating for young girls. And it never occurred to me to be thin or to worry about my weight too much. I saw other people doing it. I was at stage school when I was young, and I saw other people worrying about food, but that wasn't something that I really worried about. However, it still got hold of me, and I suppose before that happened, I had experienced a series of difficult relationships where I was sexually assaulted and physically assaulted. On a number of occasions by different people. And I think I just got to the point where I was like, I really didn't know how to get help. And when I got an eating disorder, I knew very quickly that it was a very obvious cry for help. One of my friends had gone on a diet, and I thought, I'll just do it with her. And I think that overnight it became an absolute obsession that every calorie was taken in was counted, every calorie spent was counted. Every kind of moment of my mind was taken up with restricting and denying myself things. And I lost a lot of weight really quickly. And I remember very clearly sitting in the bath, and it wasn't comfortable because I was quite bony. And I was looking at my arms and how thin they were, and that I could get my hands, my fingers around my wrist, and how far I could get it up my arm. And being so delighted about that, and just kind of saying in my mind, well, that's it then, because they'll have to take notice of me now. They'll have to take notice if I'm like a little bird, and I'll stop being exploited. And that was a very conscious decision. And, you know, life after that was a bit like, everything went a bit weird. You know, when you stop eating, you have terrible mood swings, shocking mood swings. And, you know, you're dizzy and lightheaded all the time. And you also get high off it as well. There's a kind of like, I'm so much better than everyone else because I can deny myself the ultimate, you know, basics. I don't need the basics, I don't need food, and I'm better than you. You know, so, and I don't remember being the sort of person that wanted to think I was better than everyone else. I don't remember being the sort of person that would lie all the time, but that became a way of life. And it was sort of disturbing. It really robs you of your personality. And I remember starting at college, and this was before I had an eating disorder, and I remember starting there, and there was this girl there in my form group, and she was gorgeous. And I remember thinking, God, she's gorgeous, and she's got curves, and she's like that. And all the boys fancy her, she's gorgeous. And then within a few months of having an eating disorder, I remember thinking, God, she's fat. She is so fat. How does she walk around with that weight on her? And she hadn't changed. It was just, you know, my version of reality was completely distorted. Completely distorted. And I had no way of kind of knowing what was normal anymore. And that kind of suddenly all went out the window. And I couldn't really sustain it for very long. I suppose I was like that for about a year. And then eventually I became bulimic. And then the eating disorder shifted. And I just couldn't sustain the restriction. And so I would binge. And my parents saw that and they thought that was great. And that was it. Then my eating disorder was over because I was eating. And I did put on a little bit of weight at that time. But clearly that was just a new kink in the road. And then things like taking laxatives and throwing up became the modus operandi. And that brought something new to the equation for me, because there was something very cathartic about feeling, having these terrible mood swings and then feeling like I could just throw it all up. Flush the chain and it would all go away. You know, that I had power over my body, that I could cut corners, that I could have my cake and eat it, as it were. I mean, the idea I had any control over my life is an absolute joke. But it just became a way of life. And it became a way of life that, as a bulimic, I felt like an absolute failure. I wanted to be an anorexic, but I couldn't do it. I was a failed anorexic. And for me in my head then, I couldn't admit to anyone that I had an eating disorder, because that would be like I was taking the piss. I didn't have an eating disorder. I was just I was a wannabe, and that was it. I was never bad enough to get a feeding tube or anything like that. And I had two or three friends who were very seriously anorexic and had feeding tubes. And so by contrast, I always felt like, well, my story is not legitimate enough. My story isn't serious enough. I'm not underweight. I'm not overweight. And then you kind of just hide in plain sight. And people, I didn't feel that I could share it with anybody. And I hadn't noticed, I mean, I didn't really notice until I came into OA how secretive I was around food. But certainly life as a bulimic is really, is extremely isolating. You don't share anything. You do eat in front of other people, but, you know, the majority of your difficult eating behaviours really happens around private moments, and, you know, carving out those private moments in order to do what it was that you've got to do. And that just, I mean, at that point then, it was like, that just went on for 20 years, pretty much. I had various physical ailments because of it. You know, I put myself at risk. But they weren't something that kind of went, oh, eating disorder, or it wasn't obvious to anyone. So I could always hide it from people what the physical ailments were for me, and, you know, kidney infections and, you know, various things that, you know, interfering with your hormones and various other things. And it was just became a way of life. It just became what I did all the time, and I don't remember it being any different. And at one point I just felt, well, that's just me. That's just the way I am. Just get on with it. And I think, you know, I did seek out some counselling, and what actually surprised me was that counselling and medication really helped my mental health massively. But the eating disorder never went. And it is an addiction, and even getting better, physically getting better, mentally getting better, did not rid me of the relationship that I had with food. And I always thought, oh, well, you know, I won't tell my counsellor that I've got a really bad relationship with food. I sort of mention it in passing, but I won't make it a point of going there. And I was really surprised when I still just wanted to eat. So then I didn't want to just eat because I was sad or lonely or desperate. I wanted to eat because I was happy. I wanted to eat because it was a very pleasurable experience. It's where I got my pleasure from. Who was I talking to the other day and said, you know, they've had an affair with a loaf of bread. You know, they literally feel like their husband could say to them, I'm leaving you because you're having an affair with food. I mean, that seems quite realistic to me, that you have this secretive life that you invest in and that's romantic, and you have these beautiful sensual relationships with chocolate or tea or whatever it is, you know, that food isn't just about the kind of bad stuff. It's also then became about every single emotion I had. Mark it with food, or mark it with fasting, or mark it with dieting. And I tried every way of kind of managing getting rid of it, and it wouldn't go. And then it was on my 42nd birthday, I woke up and I was in some ridiculous diet program thing, and I was going apparently for a weigh-in that day. And I think I'd fasted for 2 days before that and hadn't eaten anything, and other various behaviours I got up to. And when I woke up in the morning, I almost passed out, and I had to lay on my bed, and the room was spinning. And I just remember thinking, you know, Christ, you know, it's my birthday. I have been here 25 years now, and I'm still doing this absolute ridiculous behaviour, and I want to get rid of it. And, you know, nothing else is working. And I looked again at OA, and I've been looking at OA for quite a while, and there was nothing available near where I lived. And so I listened to the podcasts, which were great, and I read some of the books. And then that time I looked, there was a new meeting available that I could get to. And it took so much courage to get through the front door. I was so terrified, because it was like, if this doesn't work, I don't have any other options. There is nothing else available to me at this stage. And I'm going to be so humiliated if there is nothing else that can help me. And my first meeting was really nice, and I have kept coming back ever since. It's always been, for me, OA has been, I think there's a phrase in the book, and it's like, you know, I think it's in like step one or step two, it says like, welcome back, welcome home. And I did feel like that. I heard people speaking the sorts of things that I totally related to. It allowed me to speak my reality. It allowed me to speak about my experience of food. And it, for the first time ever, feeling listened to and understood, and not ridiculed or ignored, or like I was lying or cheating or anything else. It was a really wonderful experience. And then I didn't quite get abstinent straight away. I think I was in program for about 6 or 7 months, and then I finally got a sponsor. I waited quite a long time to find a sponsor that I was happy with, that I felt had good abstinence, had something that I wanted. And I reached out to her, and she asked me to do 90 meetings in 90 days or thereabouts, which I did. And she asked me to do a food plan to say what my abstinence was, and give her my food plan, of like a daily food plan of what I was going to eat every day. And that was just so difficult. That was so painful. It was so shameful at the time. I don't think anything of it now, and it was the absolute turning point for me, giving her that, because I didn't want to. I was more kind of committed to my relationship with her than my relationship with myself, almost. It's like, I just don't want to lie to her. I'm just so fed up. I don't want to lie to anyone else. And I'm going to tell her what I'm going to eat. And even if I don't want it at the end of the day, I'm just going to have it, because I've told her that's what I'm going to eat, and I'm just going to eat it. And that routine and being honest, and she gave me a little bit of feedback, which was really useful, because I had to give up dieting as well as binging and fasting. So it's a difficult line to tread, but that was a massive turning point and really helped me get accountable and start working the steps. And I'm up to step 9, which is really a killer, and I'm not enjoying it. But I kind of have a bit of faith that it's worked for other people and it's worth continuing on. And every other step has been, you know, has been a new revelation and has definitely been something. Like, each step has made sense. I've worked each step quite thoroughly and it's all kind of made a lot of sense to me and definitely has helped me. There's no question, I would not be abstinent without this program, and I would not be leading a life that I am able to be more responsible in and take part in if it wasn't for this program. But that's not to say that recovery is easy, and I think particularly for a bulimic it's quite difficult. It's very kind of complex relationship with food, eating, not eating, dieting, not dieting, fasting, not fasting. I've put on weight since being in the program, which I found a massive trigger. I found that really difficult, and I was for a while I was thinking, like, I just don't know if I can do that. But I've sought outside help for some of those things, and I remember hearing on a podcast, I'm going to say it just in case it helps anyone else, but I heard someone say, who was in a similar position to me, that she just decided that she was going to eat 3 healthy meals a day that she felt were reasonable and moderate, and her weight was none of her business, and it was between her, you know, that was between God and her body, and she was just going to accept what has happened, and as long as she did the work and ate good food and didn't overeat and didn't undereat, she was happy. And I think when I heard that, I was like, I think I can make peace with that idea. And I have to learn to live in the body that I have, which is not always easy, but is so much easier. And, you know, compared to like 20 odd years of inertia and stagnation, the progress that I've made in the last couple of years has been, you know, nothing short of a miracle for me. And there's no way I could do it on my own. And it's made my life much, much better. It's not easy. It's hard work. But I'm really grateful to this program for moving me onwards. And I don't think I've got anything else to say on that. So I'm going to leave it there. Thanks for listening.